Blog Talk Radio.
Listen to your friends and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, pumped. It's Friday. Got to the end of the week, so, you know, awesome.
Well, and we've got a fun topic tonight, too. You know, I like putting a provocative question in the show title whenever I can, and I think this is a pretty good one, right? Think you know the whole story? Because you know what the answer to that one is? Well, you're wrong, right? Because we've got the secrets revealed right here tonight, you know. And if you, some of you probably do know the whole story, but these are all stories that talk about the fact that what we thought was true up until very recently about some old stuff and some fairly new stuff turns out to be not so accurate. We're learning amazing things all the time, aren't we?
Yep, and you know, you say there's somebody knows the whole story. The truth is, there's not a soul living that knows the whole story. It's too much happening. It's too much to know. But hey, that doesn't keep us from trying. And it's fun learning stuff, particularly if it goes against conventional wisdom. So,
You're probably too young, Stephen, to remember there used to be an old radio guy did the news every day called Paul Harvey. Do you remember him?
Good day.
Yeah, good. Paul Harvey, good day. He also did a show called The Rest of the Story, right?
Yep.
And it was just him telling some, you know, he would lead in with some really interesting scenario, some interesting setup, and then you'd get to the end and, you know, the surprise was, you know, and that man's name was John Wayne or something. You know, it would end.
Yeah, that's right.
It would all come together.
And he was Abraham Lincoln. Young Abe, you know, he would tell the whole story and you wouldn't know who he was until the very end, you know. So.
Right, and then you get to the end and like, oh, wow. Yeah. And that's what this is. This is the rest of the story, or at least the rest of the story so far, because here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to get complacent and think, well, now we've got it all figured out and we don't have anything else to learn. If we've come this far and we've learned more, we've got more that we're going to learn. But let's start with this first one. Comet collision could have caused rapid carbon rise. Well, why is that surprising? It's surprising because we thought that that was volcanoes driving
the release of methane by way of the volcanoes, right? That methane is a more potent greenhouse gas even than carbon. By about a factor of 10, I think. So
right.
we thought that was the deal, but maybe not, huh?
Yeah, 55 million years ago, the planet warmed up real nice, and we thought it was volcanoes pumping carbon into the air. How would a comet have done this exactly?
Well, it could be a comet filled with carbon, I guess. You know, giant coal, the ball of coal, collides with the planet.
Entirely possible that the comet itself was just, you know, covered in carbon. There was a big chunk of carbon and introduced all the carbon. Also, I guess the impact, it could have hit in just such a way as to free up a bunch of carbon that otherwise wouldn't have been freed up. And that is one of those...
Which would have stayed sequestered somehow. Yeah.
Exactly. And that is one of those intensifying cycles anyway. This is what we talk about when we talk about climate change. So, you know, the greenhouse effect is once you get a little carbon in and it warms up a little, it brings more carbon in and it warms up more. So that's an interesting theory, but does it change much in terms of what we're thinking about the world we live in now or climate change, or You know, why is this a big deal? Is it just that, well, now we think it was something else, or are there deeper implications than that?
I don't know. I would say that we are seeing anthropomorphic rise in temperature, right? In other words, human caused rise in temperature by release of carbon. And so, I mean, we obviously don't want to change the climate of our planet, not significantly, right? So, to be good stewards of our own world seems like a wise thing to do. So, I don't know. I don't know if this necessarily speaks to that very much. It does show that potentially carbon can have a dramatic effect on climate. So maybe it does give us at least that much. So,
I guess it does, and also it just gives you the old, if it's not one thing, it's another, right? I think, oh, volcanoes are dangerous. Well, a comet can hit. That can do all kinds of, I mean.
Well, you know what it does tell us is that we need to be a multi-planet species. So let's get to Mars or someplace like that as soon as possible.
Right. Well, because one day they may say a single migration from Earth to Mars led to the whole population. And that's
you are the king of segues. I bow to you, Phil. That's awesome.
I do what I can here. Because our second story is a single migration from Africa populated the world. This is interesting because we know that early humans came out of Africa multiple times. Not only did Homo sapiens come out of Africa more than once, Homo erectus did, right? And they actually populated the world more than once. But, you know, forget them. They went extinct. Us, right? We started in Africa and headed out into the rest of the world numerous times. But it turns out that everybody living today is descended from a single population that came out of Africa sometime between 50,000 and 80,000 years ago. You know, I guess that's why you need to do it several times, right? The other one,
yeah, you got to get it right. Yeah.
Well, the other ones either got absorbed in, or they just didn't click with the rest of the world. Maybe should have stayed in Africa. I don't know. But luckily, this one group really sprouted, right? And here we are all to talk.
Well,
about
it seems that the picture is probably a little more complex than that because you know, various populations throughout the world have. You know, different mixtures of different human DNA. For example, the Europeans tend to have a little more Neanderthal as part of their genetic makeup. Just a touch, right? And
yeah, they do, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a different archaic human that there's just a touch of in places like. The Australian Aborigines have just a touch of a slightly different.
The Denisovians show up elsewhere in Europe, and then there's this new group that they've identified down in Australia with the Aborigines. But that's all this one group from Africa interacting with whoever they
are. Yeah, interacting with the people that were already there and stuff. But yeah, it was apparently that one dispersal really was the one that took. I guess so. That's remarkable.
That is amazing. You would not have guessed that, I don't think. And,
right.
and it's not to say that all the others completely failed, but we're all descended from that one. That's the bottom line, you know. If there were a few other people from some of the other attempts mixed in there, okay, fine. But the one that really made us the planet we are is this one group of people who headed out from Africa, and here we all are. It's you know, this one is a bigger surprise to me than the comet collision, because I would have believed anything, right? If you tell me, 50 million years ago, the temperature shot way up, you could have told me anything, right? You could have said, well, it was a comet, it was a volcano. But this one I thought we had nailed, you know? People were constantly coming out of Africa, right? So you got all these different people in the world, and then people are so different, and that must account for the fact that there were all these different groups. But no, ultimately we descend from this one group. That is quite surprising, isn't it?
Yeah. I read a short story that I wish I could remember the name of, Phil. It was a group of people living on the eastern shore of Africa, basically living off of, you know, what they could gather there on the beaches, as well as, you know, fish or whatever they could catch in the water. And it's basically the story of this one group beginning to, you know, go further and further out, And eventually to the point that, you know, they establish a small group of them you know, are get established on the far shore there. You know, it's really the story of the first people leaving Africa. It was a neat story.
Of the name of that, we should definitely link that.
I'll share it with the audience. I'll see if I can research that and perhaps share with the audience next week.
That sounds like something I'd like to read. So yeah,
think
what that
story
is. Okay, here's an interesting one, and this is kind of the next two are kind of a two step. Okay, because they're both astronomical, and they're both very interesting, but one is kind of bigger than the other, as you'll see. Still. Our next story is the moon has hundreds more craters than we thought. It's like we can't get anything right, okay? You know, we've been looking at the moon for a long time. We've been there, and it turns out that there are about a third more craters than we thought there were. Why is that? Well, it's because we never actually counted. You know, we have counted areas of the moon because, you know what, there's a lot of craters up there. Stuff's hitting the moon all the time. And it has been for, you know, several billion years now. So there's a lot of craters up there. So what do? We took an area of the moon, did a survey, and said there's this many here, therefore there's this many on the moon. But it turns out that the methodology that was used both in taking that initial sample and in calculating how many craters that means the moon has were both, you know, they fell short. And so the moon's just a lot more pockmarked even than we thought it was. And we thought it was pretty cratery to begin with, didn't we?
That's right. I mean, I can't imagine the moon. I mean, when I picture the surface of the moon in my mind's eye, it's Apollo images that flash in my memory, right?
Right.
And, you know, that's always craters. I mean, there's craters everywhere. That's part of the deal. And, but no, it's more so than we thought. You know, we call it the dark side of the moon. It's no more dark than the side that faces us, right? But the moon is tidally locked, so we only ever see one face of the moon. But the far side is apparently more pockmarked than the side that faces us. And I wonder if they took that into account, the difference between the roughness of the far side of the moon versus the near side.
Yeah, it's getting bombarded even more than the side we see. I think it was probably some of those kinds of, you know, not taking all that into consideration. Plus, we know that side of the moon a lot better than we used to.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it. We've seen a lot more images of it over the last few decades than we ever had before. So that all kind of helps get a more accurate picture of the moon. But that's nothing, okay, compared to this next one. This is the big one, okay? This story kind of blew me away when I read it. And this has implications that I think go well beyond just the astronomical gee whiz, and we'll talk about this a little bit. But anyway, the headline is, the observable universe contains 10 times more galaxies than previously thought. Okay, so
that's amazing.
We already thought there were a lot of galaxies, right?
Yeah.
Estimates were around 100 billion, and now they're saying maybe there's about a trillion galaxies in the universe.
Now, keep in mind,
how we've gotten
when we look into the night sky and look up and see all those stars, more stars than we could possibly count, right?
Right.
At least 50, right?
Right. Yeah. More than 50. Yeah.
Yeah, more than 50.
Yeah.
A little joke from last week. Sorry, folks. But anyway, it's all the stars we see in our night sky are from this galaxy. You know, it's from the Milky Way galaxy. All the stars we see when we look up, and that's just one of trillions and trillions of galaxies in the visible universe. And the visible universe, the best we can understand is that the visible universe is a tiny, tiny fraction of the entire universe. So
very likely, I'm gonna rein you back in. You've gotten carried away because we're saying a trillion observable universe, not trillions
okay.
and trillions.
So not trillions and trillions.
You got carried
okay.
away there.
Yeah, that happens.
You're trying to one-up Carl Sagan is what you're trying to do there. literally quadrillions
and quadrillions
of galaxies. But basically what that means is you can point your finger anywhere in the night sky and you're pointing at galaxies, okay?
It's lots just, of them. Yeah.
We're just covered with them. That's all there is up there. Why don't we see them? This is the question. Why isn't the night sky just this diffuse, you know, nightlight, right? Why can't we see all these? And if you follow the linked article, they go into some detail about that. It's actually quite interesting. It has to do with redshift. It has to do with how far away many of them are, how far we're moving away from them. But the light from them ultimately diffuses, and we get this dark sky. But that dark sky is hiding, I mean, you know, get your head around the idea of a trillion. Not a trillion stars, right? Not a trillion planets. Not a trillion particles. A trillion galaxies. Each galaxy is filled with literally billions, hundreds of billions of stars, right? From what we've learned about our own galaxy, each one of those stars probably has planets around it. And this universe has become a very busy, bustling, crowded place. I mean, there's just an awful lot out there. And we thought there was a lot. And now we find there's 10 times more than we thought. That's just one that it's almost too big to get your head around. It's such a big story that, of course, no one pays much attention to it because it's too big to really think about. Picture how big the universe is. Oh, okay, no, we're wrong. It's 10 times bigger, right? That's just like, what? You go from your standard of bigness to 10 times that size. And here's what I was thinking, and I didn't look this up or anything, and I don't recall seeing it anywhere in the article, but could this explain the missing matter in the universe?
You know what?
There's only about 10% of the mass we need to account for what's going on in the universe. And it's like, oh, well, it turns out there's 10 times more galaxies than we thought there were. It seems to me those two problems kind of go together. I'm sure other people are thinking about this, or someone who really understands it could call in real quick and tell us that I'm being ridiculous. But that sounds right to me. It's like, oh, well, there's all the missing mass in the universe. It's all those galaxies we didn't even know were there.
It'd be interesting. I'm gonna read, see if I can read up on that and give you a, my thought on that. But it's I think that it might be a different concept completely, because the missing matter is local to us. Our own galaxy is not behaving the way we would expect. It's like, you know, we're not seeing, but maybe a tenth of what we need to be seeing with our own galaxy for it to be behaving the way it is.
Right.
So you know, the fact that there's 10 times as many galaxies in the visible universe than we thought, I don't know if that really speaks to the problem we're seeing on a local level. So, but I'll read up on that and see if I can answer that next week.
Okay. Well, here's my next thought, and this is where we're going to get really wacky. So hope everybody's sitting down. But if there's a trillion galaxies out there, and just repeating the math I just did with the hundreds of billions of stars in each galaxy, planets around almost all of those stars, there's got to be a very Earth-like planet out there. You know what I'm saying? Not just, I mean, very Earth-like. They're speaking English on this planet, you know? I mean, I don't know. Right? I don't know what the actual statistical odds are on this kind of stuff, But you know, we always think, well, when we find alien life, they're going to be very different. They're going to be very different. But with a trillion galaxies out there, I think we could find a planet where they're very much the same, right? Where things followed almost exactly the same path. Maybe I don't understand the math well enough, and I'm just making a fool of myself even suggesting this. But
you go out far enough, and there's a couple of guys doing a podcast and saying the same thing. You know, there's got to be another. You know, there's guys out there in a very similar world. I don't know. It seems to me that the universe would have to be pretty big and a whole lot of civilizations before we come across one that's
maybe 10 times bigger isn't big enough. But I mean, one of the things Max Tegmark talks about when he talks about the parallel universe is just, you know, how far away in a, you know, assuming a universe where just everything is kind of diffuse, right? How far do you have to travel before you find an exact duplicate of this planet? And I'm saying if there's a trillion galaxies, and, you know, with all those stars pumping out all those planets, okay, maybe it's not the exact duplicate, and maybe they're not exactly speaking English, but I would say the chances of finding some Klingons or Vulcans or, you know, something, you know, humans with just a few ridges a la Star Trek The Next Generation, I think have increased dramatically with this discovery.
Perhaps you're right, Phil. I'll go for that.
I'm going to go that far anyway. You know, maybe that's too far. But anyway, so there you have it. There's some interesting, you know, we thought we knew what was going on. Turns out the universe has got 10 times as many galaxies. Turns out we all came from one group in Africa. Turns out it may have been a comet collision. The moon's got more holes on it than we thought. All we're saying is don't get too comfortable, okay, about any subject. Anything you think you know the whole story, there's probably more that you can learn. And with that, Stephen, I think we can let's geek out a little bit. What do we got going on?
Well, we got a story here about VR here, virtual reality, and it's pretty exciting, Phil, because you know this is supposed to be the year that we got virtual reality, and you know if you're interested in having it, you can go out and get it, and there'd be a lot of support for it. And, of course, the Oculus Rift was introduced this year, as well as the HTC Vive, or is it Vive?
Right.
Sorry about that. But both those systems Vive were introduced. And, you know, both have their pluses, but they haven't really taken off. But there's one more system to be introduced before the end of the year, and it's to come out next month, I understand. And that's the PlayStation's virtual reality headset, I was reading in on The Verge a review of it, and the way the review is titled is "When Good Enough Is Great," and you know that's you know often we find that you know once you reach a certain threshold of something being good enough, it sort of takes over, doesn't it?
Gain momentum with something once it reaches, like a baseline of credibility or a baseline of capability, usefulness,
right?
Adaptability.
Well, so I want to give you a for example. If a word processor that I could, best word processor in the world is arguably Microsoft Word, but do I use that day to day? No, I don't. What do I use? I use Google Docs. Why is that?
Right.
You know, it's not as good as Microsoft Word. Why do I use Google Docs? Because it's good enough, and it offers, you know, a very easy collaboration tool between
right.
myself and my dispersed staff that are operating from various offices. And it's good enough. It doesn't have to be as good as Microsoft Word to really beat Microsoft Word at its own game. And so maybe that's what's happening here with the PlayStation. It's not as it's arguably not as good. It doesn't offer the same resolution or as big of a screen to look at once you put it on your head as what the other things offer. But you're plugging into the PlayStation system, okay? And that is a console that you know is supported by many many game makers.
Right.
And right before the recording of this show, Phil, I was sitting there with the kids and a commercial comes on and it was for a game for this system. And I said, oh, when I saw that commercial, I said, well, I know what I'm getting for the kids for Christmas. Right. In addition to shelling out for the PlayStation a VR setup, which is $500, by the way. The setup itself, the VR itself is only $300-something, but if you get the other things that you really need to have to make it work properly, it's a $500 deal. But this game is Arkham VR. You are Batman, man. You are
you
Batman.
You get to be Batman.
You get to be Batman and do the Gotham thing. I mean, from the point of view of Batman, immersed in this VR world, And, you know, it shows, and the commercial shows not just the footage from the game, but also the people playing it and freaking out, you know, how cool it is. So that's, you know, I'm looking forward to that. So that's going to be fun and can't wait for that.
That sounds really cool. Well, I mean, you know, what's interesting about this is the thing that makes this a breakthrough is that, yes, you're buying VR. Yes, you're buying a VR system. But really what you're doing is you're buying a peripheral to go with a gaming system you already have, right?
That's
what really makes this different. And whether
the other systems were for, you know, for PCs.
Right.
And, the value of the PC is that you can, you know, there are various ways that you can, soup up your system. You know, you can hot rod your PC out in a variety of ways. But that's also the downside of it. When you're dealing with a console, the makers of the software that you're running on, the games that you're running on the console, know the limits of your console.
Right.
They know the exact limits of what you're doing. And so they write for it directly. And so the amount of, you can get to the game, you can get to the fun because so many of these things are taken off the table. So many of the potential problems of getting your system to operate, you know, are taken off the table because you're dealing with a console. So, you know, I predict that this will be the first VR that most people experience. And this is going to be cool. It's going to be fun to see this come up.
Well, you look at the role that gaming has played in introducing augmented reality with Wii and with what's the Xbox system called? Of course, I can't think of that one. I have that one, so I can't think of it. But where you are being kind of put into this environment on the screen, right? And it's kind of like it's a little bit of you and a little bit of it's kind of AR, kind of VR. But this really gets you into the action. I would think that we're going to see a very rapid development here where either AR or VR become essentially they're going to be pretty much the only way people interact with games. You know, this, we could be looking at the death of the joystick, if you can believe that.
Well, if this gives us the experience of being Batman, I mean,
yeah,
you know, then why would you ever go back? Right. I mean, you know, if you can be Batman, well, it's the joke, you know, if you can be Batman, right?
Yeah. Always be yourself unless you can be Batman, right?
And then be Batman, yeah. So
then be Batman, yeah.
so
now they're offering the actual you can be Batman, so
right.
People are going to have to take that, yeah.
That's right.
Although, I got to say, in VR, I want to be Superman. I want to fly, okay?
Well, I suspect that's right around the corner, too. So
can you play the other characters? Can you be the Joker?
Well, in the original, in some of the Arkham games, you can... I know you can be Catwoman one of the Arkham games, so perhaps
that would be an interesting experience too, for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Actually, I'd probably rather be Catwoman than Joker, come to think of it. But
well, you know, there's crazy and then there's really crazy. So yeah.
Anyway, fun stuff to look forward to. Thanks for taking us through that, Stephen. And can you believe it? The week has ended. We've told the complete story. We've talked about some great stuff. And you know what? We're going to be back with three more brand new shows next week. So it's been great talking to you, Stephen. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.